Christopher Tremblay, Walt's Pilgrimage. Christopher, why Disney? How did your interest in Walt Disney begin?
Well, I have my parents to thank for exposing me to Disney and Mickey Mouse when I was a kid. So, you know, I had the Disney collection books of the classics and had a little Mickey lamp in my room and Mickey bed sheets. And when I was five, we took my first trip to the Walt Disney World Resort in Florida. Fortunately, my grandma lived in Tampa, not too far away, so she was able to join us. So that was my first exposure to, you know, one of Walt's theme parks. And of course, fell in love being able to meet all of the characters. And just, you know, I think that experience always just remained in my heart as, you know, a powerful childhood travel adventure.
And didn't you return there during your college years?
I did. So, you know, throughout, you know, high school, I would write papers that were themed around Disney. And as I was getting ready to graduate from high school, I had learned about the Walt Disney World College program from somebody I worked with. And so I made it my goal to do that program when I got to Western Michigan University. And as I did that, so most people don't know that I applied three times before I got in the program. And I was just as determined as Walt was to build Disneyland. I was determined to participate in the college program. And so I did that, took a semester off of college and worked at the Caribbean Beach Resort down there and made some awesome friends, did some research for my honors college thesis, which had a Disney theme. And so that was another ultimate kind of Disney experience. And it was so great to work for the Walt Disney Company at that time.
So what is it about Disney that still holds you, because you're no longer a kid with a Mickey? Well, I don't know if you still have a Mickey Mouse lamp on your nightstand, but what is it that still holds you and fascinates you about him?
I think it's the fact that, you know, Walt's creativity continues still to this day, right? The seed that he planted with his movies and then with the opening of Disneyland, you know, it's still so much alive. And you see, you know, the company is evolving, but there's still just that sense of that all of those original ideas that Walt had and the vision that he had. And there's still so much to learn about, you know, Walt Disney and his background. You know, yes, there's been, you know, over 50 biographies written about his life, but, you know, each one takes a different, you know, twist and turn. And you see with the advancement of the Walt Disney Hometown Museum, things that they're bringing back. So I think there's also just a renewed interest on studying, you know, Walt Disney, his life and his impact on culture. And so that's, you know, what recently drew me in, where I had the idea to, you know, to create this, you know, college course from scratch.
Tell us about that college course.
So, you know, kind of my funny story about the course was that two worlds of mine collided in December of 2013. I had gotten a notification on Kickstarter that the Walt Disney Birthplace was doing a crowdfunding fundraiser. And so, of course, I pledged my support. I had forgotten that Walt had been born in Chicago, because most people think that he was born in Marceline, Missouri, because that's where the Hometown Museum is. That's where all his formative years were spent, and he has lots of memories there. But indeed, he was born on a second-floor house on Tripp Avenue. And so in that same month, I happened to be going to the Treasures of the Walt Disney Archives exhibit at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago. And of course, I had walked through and just really reminded about Marceline. And so I had thought of, like, I need to pull some of my fellow Disney fans together, and we're going to do a road trip. We're going to start in Chicago and then go to Marceline, because I'd always wanted to go to Marceline. And I mentioned this to a good friend of mine who was a colleague at Western, Jules Primavera Kuntz. And I said, I think I want to do this. And she's like, what you're describing sounds like a study in the state course for the Lee Honors College. And I was like, really? She's like, you should write it up. And so I talked to the dean of the Honors College at the time, Carla Koretsky, and I was a graduate of the Honors College, had just earned my doctorate, and I wrote it up for her, and she said, let's give it a try. It sounds intriguing. And so hence, that's what, you know, kind of how the course came to be.
Well, it's not just the course. We're talking also about a book, actually more than one book. One is for adults, Waltz Pilgrimage, and then there's Waltz Pilgrimage Junior for children. But let's start with the adult book. What prompted you to put this together?
So, you know, after probably the second year of teaching the class and knowing that I can only take students a year because of travel logistics and cost, I was like, how can I get more people to enjoy and take advantage of this walkthrough of Walt's life? And I have been collecting all of this information, you know, so for 4 years, you know, researching all the things about all of the places in his life. And nobody had really ever published a book that was kind of geographically based, right? I mean, there's lots of different ways that you can present, you know, somebody's life story. But I was like, I think this could be kind of part travel guide, part biography, part history, which I had never really kind of seen done before. And I thought it works, right? And so I started writing up a few of the cities that we had visited. And then I also had some of my students as part of their class assignment contribute to some of those chapters because it gave me a chance to showcase them. And then I was like, you know what, I need to get this all down on paper and, you know, and see what it looks like. And at one point I did have to stop last July when I was putting the finishing touches on because I could have just added more pages. And I realized I was getting close to 400 pages. And I was like, I think this is pretty good for the first edition, you know, the North American edition, because the fact is it's, you know, it covers over 275 sites in, mm-hmm. you know, 80 different cities in North America. I think it's pretty comprehensive. But I wanted people to be able to pick up the book and pick a city, a region, a state to go explore and learn about what was the Walt Disney connection there. Because it really covers places that he lived, worked, and played. And even talks about places like Mineral King in the Sequoia National Park that never came to be. But yet there's still Disney property, you know, within that site that can never be built on. So just, you know, and pulling out different, you know, it's a way to learn about Walt Disney, but it's also a way to learn about kind of what was going on during the time that he was alive and what was he involved in.
And there's a connection to Kalamazoo, to Battle Creek, to Gilmore. Talk about that.
Yeah, so, you know, most people don't realize that, you know, Walt had visited, you know, the state of Michigan at least 8 documented times that we've been able to, you know, discover. And, you know, it is interesting that, again, right in Kalamazoo, with the connection with, you know, the Gilmore family, because Walt and the Gilmores both had a second home in Smoke Tree Ranch in Palm Springs, California. And so that's how they first got connected. And I always love when I take the students to Disneyland in the course and, you know, down on Main Street, you actually can see one of the windows is dedicated, you know, to Upjohn and to Gilmore. Because at one point, Upjohn had sponsored a kind of throwback vintage pharmacy on Main Street, you know, it later closed in the 70s. But it's neat for the students to be like, wow, there's a little bit of Kalamazoo in Disneyland, right? Who knew? Mm-hmm. And then Walt Disney were connecting. Don was interested in acquiring the Rolls Royce from the Gnomemobile movie that Walt was working on. And so, you know, Don bought it from Walt Disney, and Walt decided to throw in, you know, a big set piece from the movie, which is the back seat of that Rolls Royce that they had blown up well prior to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids concept. So he had, you know, both the car and that set piece shipped to Gilmore, and that's what's in the Gilmore Car Museum, which is neat to see. So again, most people don't realize right in the backyard of Kalamazoo that we've got Disney, you know, right there, and you can see Walt's, you know, if you go into the archives at the Car Museum, you can see Walt's signature, you know, when he signed in at the museum.
And didn't he have a connection to Postum's cereals in Battle Creek as well?
Yeah, so, you know, the connection to Battle Creek was just that Postum Cereal had done a licensing agreement with Disney so that, you know, Disney characters could appear on, you know, the cereal boxes. So it was a cross promotion for both, and that was done for a couple of years, you know, for several years. So that was that connection. And then within the Dearborn area, you know, Walt Disney was connected to you know, Henry Ford, because, you know, Walt made visits to Greenfield Village to see what Henry had been doing there and with the museum. And then Walt later worked with Ford on the Magic Skyway for the 1964-65 World's Fair exhibit. And that's actually where Walt, you know, Walt actually put together several exhibits for that World's Fair that, you know, ended up becoming attractions in his theme parks. So he had others pay for the attractions, and then he relocated them. So you've got It's a Small World and even things like the Carousel of Progress. So Walt was pretty ingenious back then as a way to figure out how to sustain and further use, you know, things that were developed for one place to put them in another place.
So how did you go about tracking down all these places? How did you do the research?
Yeah, so, you know, what's fascinating, I think after a while, I mean, first of all, I read several of the prominent, you know, biographies. The one that the family always recommends is the Bob Thomas. So I started with that one. That's the one we used for our textbook. But I've now amassed, you know, probably a collection of about 25, you know, Disney biographies. I actually, even in my hand, I'm holding it right now, have the story of Walt Disney, which was Walt's daughter, Diane Disney Miller, actually told the story to Pete Martin, you know, who documented it, and this was published in 1956. So it's really the first telling of Walt Disney's life story, and it's told first person through, you know, the lens of his daughter. So that's a very kind of sacred piece of, you know, Walt Disney history. But as I would start reading, I would be reading with a geographic mindset. So I was always looking for locations that I could plug into the pilgrimage. I mean, most people don't realize that there's actually, like, you know, nearly 30 places in Kansas City that have a Walt Disney connection. Now, some of them aren't there anymore, right? Or some of them have been a lot that Walt filmed in. So some of them are, you know, insignificant. But for the diehard Disney fan who wants to know where Walt was all in Kansas City, you now know that. And you know that for many of the major cities across, you know, the country. And some are more obscure. And, you know, I did include things like, you know, where Walt's father came from in Canada and where he spent time, and even where Walt's wife Lillian grew up in Idaho. You know, they never really spent time there, other than they got married there. But still, Lillian was a, you know, huge part of Walt's life, you know, in terms of supporting all of his dreams and ambitions. And so I wanted to make sure that she was represented, you know, in there as well. So just constantly scouring websites. I consulted a lot with Dave Smith from, you know, former founder of the Walt Disney Archives. Mm-hmm. He's a, you know, because he obviously lived and breathed that. He worked there for 40 years. And so, you know, verifying information that way as well has been very helpful.
And the foreword to the book is by Disney's son-in-law, Ron Miller.
Yes. So I will never forget the day that I, you know, actually got an email response back from Ron Miller. I tracked him down through his winery, Silverado Vineyards, out in California. And I had shared with him that one of my goals in the course in bringing the students to California was I wanted them to be a member of the Disney family. Just to have the authenticity of telling stories about Walt, somebody that had grown up with him. And so, you know, Ron typically, you know, doesn't accept these kinds of invitations, but there was something about our course, the course I had created, that interested in him. And so he, you know, met up with us on the course. And, you know, so I got to know him over the years. And he's very committed to carrying on what his wife, Walt's daughter, Diane Disney Miller, started with, creating the Walt Disney Family Museum to be able to tell Walt's story from Walt the person and not Walt the icon or Walt the, you know, the president of the company. Because she wanted everybody to know that he was a human being just like the rest of us. And yes, he had these awesome ideas and things that happened and things he brought to the world. But there's also some other things that you should know about him. And also correcting truth, because there's a lot of myths, you know, that that are out there. And presenting the real life Walt Disney. And so I think Ron is very committed to continuing that. And so I think he saw the course and then obviously eventually the book as being committed to those same values and principles and presenting, you know, here was this man and look at all of the different places, you know, in our country that, you know, that's there. And even I include things of how he's honored after his death, right? The 15 Walt Disney elementary schools or the different statues or different places he's honored, you know, those are permanent fixtures, you know, now in America. And again, for the diehard Disney fan who wants to see that, or people didn't even know that that was maybe that close to them.
What was your most surprising trivia that you learned about Disney? Was there anything that caught you by surprise?
There were always things that I was, you know, intrigued about, you know, what he did. You know, I think his mastermind behind the mastermind behind creating the California Institute of the Arts, you know, so creating a 4-year university and kind of bringing all the arts together, you know, just the fact that Walt's thinking went beyond the entertainment industry. You know, what he did with creating Golden Oak Ranch, which is just north of LA, which is a live working movie studio, but it's also a ranch farm that, you know, grows crops and is very sustainable. I mean, just kind of all of the things that he did to, you know, to plant the seed on. But also, I think just reading and hearing the stories, especially told by his family through the voice of his daughter, but just how much of a family man he was and how much he liked spending time with his family. You know, kind of what did he do in his free time? You know, I mean, he played some polo and he liked lawn bowling out in, you know, Smoke Tree Ranch. So just seeing the side of him that makes him relatable to all of us, right? I mean, yes, he was this icon, but he also liked to have fun just like the rest of us when he wasn't working.
Out of this larger book was also born a children's version, the junior version.
Yes. So, you know, as I worked on Walt's Pilgrimage, I came to realize that, you know, much of the content would be for youth and adults and that there was an opportunity to introduce children to Walt Disney. The fact that Walt's been, you know, dead for more than 50 years, you know, many kids growing up may not recognize that, you know, the whole man behind the brand that they hear of is Disney as they watch his movies and go to his theme parks. And so I consulted with one of my former students, Carrie Davies from Grand Rapids, and she had recommended that I do a photographic version. And since kids like looking at pictures, so they can see, you know, where he lived and worked and grew up. And so that's how Walt's Pilgrimage Jr. came to be. And it's a way to introduce, you know, children to the person that Walt Disney was.
And I understand you have other books in the works, too, something like Walt's Suitcase, or what are you working on now?
I've started working on Walt's Suitcase, which is going to be a trivia version based on Walt's Pilgrimage. You know, there's several Disney trivia books out there, but this one, again, will be, you know, specifically focused about Walt himself and his life. And so the suitcase is symbolic because when Walt left Kansas City in 1923, he basically was bankrupt from Laugh-O-Gram Films and, you know, basically took very little with him, bought a one-way ticket on the train and left from Kansas City and was headed toward Hollywood. And so, you know, that suitcase, again, is the symbol of both bankruptcy as well as freedom as well as new opportunity. And so I wanted to pay tribute to, you know, to that because he carried with everything that he owned in that suitcase at that time of his life.
So where can we find your books? Is there a website?
There is a website, waltpilgrimage.com. You can order through Amazon directly from there for both books. Locally in Kalamazoo, you can pick up copies of both books at BookBug, and I'm grateful for their inclusion of the books in their selections. And then also the WMU bookstore on campus has a small quantity available for purchase. And for people that want an autographed copy, they can go through Etsy.com and I can get them an autographed copy as well. But there are autographed copies available at BookBug.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us, Christopher. And before I let you go, what's your favorite ride at Disneyland?
By far, it's the Mad Hatter teacups in Fantasyland.